I guess this is working right. And I can't tell for sure, but I hope it's right. Okay, well, let's make the recording. We'll see how horrible it is.
Oh!
Hello, you're listening to The Far Side of the Moon. I'm Jason Nemro. It's yet another noontime constitutional out on the walk. Some updates to various things. You know, it's difficult to know how people access this thing. There's three or four different, I call it properties for any other way of saying it. The website, the blog, the podcast, which is going to come back here shortly, and well, I don't know what else, really. You know, the changes to the website make it so things can broadcast out further. It's really nice. I use DocuWiki. Mostly the CMS is not really made to be, you know, edited by other people. It's just for, it's kind of a one-way, you know, typical way. And, it gives, for every page that you see, essays or whatever else is there, you can convert that into a PDF file. And of course, PDF files get uploaded, downloaded, all kinds of places. The thing actually always points you back to the website version of the of things, and from there, of course, you know, you can always branch out to other places. Of course, the place you always go to, very easy, qix.me is where you go on the internet to get to me and my stuff. The stuff. I always like talking about the stuff. And if you've listened to any of these recordings, you know that they are interesting to say the least, for the things I talk about while I'm walking along. No notes, no script at all, just going around and walking and saying whatever's on my mind that day, as if anybody even cares. But I'm always quite impressed by what people are interested in. And I find myself that way too. I really do. Just yesterday I was on this walk during my lunch hour, and I was listening, as usual, to, you know, I have a variety. I'm either recording or listening to something. And it might be instructive to talk, to tell you about some of the things that I listen to. Of course, a lot of these things will be shoved up on the blog, and I'm not saying that I'm even very good at it, you know. I think there was a time in the past where you know, you would do show notes, and you'd do all these other things, try to connect people to things, and I'm really bad at that, because I rarely go back and ever look at or listen to my show, you know, and I know that because it's got low production quality, and that's why it's called The Far Side of the Moon, that's why it's an 8-bit recording, that's why all those things. There's some logistical reasons why it's that way. But probably the biggest is, and it functions more like a radio show, because, number one, I'm a one-man thing. I don't have a production crew. I don't have a lot of people. I don't have a producer. And I'm constantly cranking out more and more and more of this stuff. Is it low quality? Yeah, I'll grant you that. You know, if you're comparing me to some amazing person, you know, who has spent hours and hours of prep time pulling together exactly what they want to say, and they have it all kind of lined out, that's, you know, that is, and that's typical. Even for the, there's guys who radio professionals, you know, whether it's Howard Stern, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, stuff like that. I don't know if it's really caught rehearsing, but they already have their talking points are already all lined out, you know, on a piece of paper, and they follow their outline. I don't have one of those. You know, any recording I do is shoved into corners that really don't, I really don't have any time or, frankly, an inclination to sit down and do any of that. If you want stuff that's been practiced and gone over and cleaned up quite a bit, that's what you'll find on the blog. Even more so on the website, for trying to make sure that things are clean and things have been reviewed. And, well, I can't say they've been reviewed. I don't do any reviewing particularly. And I know I shoot myself in the foot all the time, because I've got some real failings in myself, and there are quite a few of them, really. Oh, and I'm trudging through this sand dune. I live in a kind of a sandy place. Parts of it are sandy, parts of it are rocky, and when the wind blows, it gets all sandy here. I don't do feedback. And I know that really shoots me in the foot in the whole social media thing. You know, everybody says, oh, you really got to get involved in this stuff. Nobody's really paying attention to you, and nothing's really going to happen. You know, you got to have a forum, you got to run a forum, you have to do Facebook, you have to do Twitter and all this other stuff. And you go, honestly, I don't really have any interest in it. At least not as I stand now. You know, someday if it becomes really... you know, the funny thing is, those things make the most difference when you really kind of catch on, when you really get popular. Those things really take off as well. But that's exactly when you don't really need that stuff. You know, it's kind of like the old classic thing about writers of when you really need an agent, you can't get one. And when you're successful enough that you really don't even need an agent anymore, you know, that's when they're all beating down your door, you know, saying, can I please represent you? And, you know, I don't... So, yeah, I don't keep... I don't take, comments from people. You know, I would end up... I have to be really careful about my time. And these are things that really chew up the time. If you want to do it right, it requires quite a bit of a commitment. And I'm not going to go there, you know. And I'm a fool, and everybody tells me so, and I think they're right. You know, I'm not disputing anybody by saying that, you know, Jay, you can't sit there and just let your stuff speak for itself, because honestly, you know, number one, it's not that good. Number two, you know, you're going into a marketplace where people expect you to be on the same par as somebody really huge, and you have to give that impression that you are somebody that huge. And you go, I'm not, and I don't want I don't want to give people the impression that I am. Although I am working on the 2004 affirmations, there's a few of them. The one I really think about the most and that I keep working on is to become a writer, speaker, and lecturer. And it's really a point of putting enough stuff out there that at some point, I don't know, it's a question of being discovered. Like I was saying in some other recent recordings, I am kind of using John Taylor Gatto method of getting into this, which means things just kind of explode and you kind of figure, when is it ever going to let up? And at some point, it either lets up or it just doesn't. I'm kind of early on the whole family ascendancy thing. It is tied together with, I don't know if I'd call it the revised Shetland process, or if it's just the Shetland process continues. Because if you take the whole thing in one large string, it's really quite amazing. It was about a year and a half ago when I started applying for jobs in Shetland. And I'll tell you, first of all, I'm a slow learner. And it took a while to figure out that if you didn't live in the European Union, if you didn't have a right to work in England, they weren't even going to consider you. It didn't matter about anything else. And it took me a while to figure out that I really didn't want to be a technician anymore. You know? So that's not what I want to be doing for the rest of my life. It might very well be that way. And, you know, it's not the worst thing to do in the universe. You know, my current default, which can be kind of scary given current conditions in the world, to work in the quasi-public sector is a little frightening. Is a little bit tricky, although I think I'm in a reasonably secure spot of it, which is I work for a state university, you know, that is somewhat government mandated. Therefore, is the thing going away? No, the thing's not going away. Some smaller universities may ultimately disappear in a downsizing, but I'm in the second largest university, and the one that's government mandated. Therefore, probably what I do is somewhat secure. You know, computers aren't going to go away. So it isn't going to be, oh, well, let's cut on something. Well, here's what we're going to cut on. We're going to cut on technology. There's no point having technology. You know, we're going back to the Stone Age. And you go, I don't think so. We would have to go down pretty gosh golly far to get to that point. The prices of many things may be going up. We may have to be more choosy about where things like electricity or heat goes, but by golly, chances are, even with the readjustment and the shuffling, my job will probably, on some level, still exist. And the great part that I've kind of got seniority over other people that do my job, so I'm hoping that counts for something insofar that if I have to get rid of one of our positions, it won't be me first. Of course, this is all just the default. I'm really kind of hoping for other things to kind of come to pass. Still want to get to Shetland at some point, but it becomes a whole question of how do you do that? What does it look like? You know, now when you write, it seems like you would want to write books. And I find myself falling back on essays more. And whatever books I'm producing would probably be essay compilations, you know, including more things that I have done. And so I think books are not a bad thing to do. However, you know, it really becomes a question of in what form do you want them to be. I'm kind of heading more toward ebooks as more of a control thing. Many people still like their books in paper form, and so you know, collection of essays, mind reader, do a book on demand thing, throw it out there, and see what happens. And it really is a big of people who already know you from other media. And I'm an interesting guy. I've done fiction writing. You go to my Amazon store, it was mostly composed of my fiction writing. I actually put up on the web page I don't know where you call the revisions if it's a third or a fourth. It doesn't matter. I'm constantly revising them, trying to smooth them out, clean them up. So for like the big essay, don't blame yourself for America, for instance. I have a new version of that That is, how do you say it? That's really, well, like I said, it's cleaned up a little bit. It's not cleaned up significantly, but I think it's better than the one that's in the Amazon bookstore. And it's available for free. I'm still trying to get my website so that it'll just give you a button to say, you know, press here for the PDF version. It automatically kind of prints one out to you. And I kind of like it. It's kind of cool. It's still, you know, it's got some things I need to tinker with to make sure that it works. It works good. I really like the thing at the end that actually gives you a QR code. You know, one of those ones where you can put your mobile phone to it, and it will take you straight to my website where this document, where the original document is held, and you can get probably the most updated version. So I hope it's not too off-putting, all the fact that my cadence is weird. I'm looking around. If there's traffic that goes by, it can disrupt what I say, you know. I don't want to just keep babbling mindlessly like I am now while somebody's driving past me, you know. I already look crazy enough. I don't feel inclined to get any crazier, particularly. Oh. So hopefully a lot of these things will get fixed up today. So we'll have that done and together. I've already worked on how exactly I'm going to do this podcast. It isn't really a podcast per se, more than it is kind of radio. You know, I don't have these fantastic, you know, oh, here's an episode, oh, let's make an archive of that and people can go back and get it. If there's one thing I've learned about archives and stuff like that, nobody ever goes back and really looks at them. I'm always amazed that people will go back to old blog postings and look at those things, but those things are kind of static and they don't require a huge investment, you know, of time or anything like that. We're listening to a recording is a little bit harder, you know. And plus, all the manpower I have to put forth to try to figure out what's even good of what I record. I think I've had some real lucid stuff that I would love to hang on to, but frankly, it just kind of sinks down into the ocean. Well, it's not an ocean, it's more of a puddle. It sinks down into the puddle of all these recordings, to the point to where I don't remember where this stuff was. And I constantly repeat myself. Let's be honest. What person really doesn't do that? You almost have to work really hard to train yourself not to just be repetitive all the time. And you know, I really think it's more of a radio type thing. So kind of treat it like radio. And I've been working on, well, at least conceptualizing in my head and getting it ready to program out my fingers somehow to using a free server service, being able to do kind of a cross between a podcast and a radio show so that people can listen. It'll, you know, it may go back a week or so. I don't know. What's all that junk out there? They've got a field they just put in. Grass that puts stuff out here. But there's all this, it looks like foam. So I guess they're spraying some kind of something on this thing, and it looks like it gets a little foamy sometimes. It looks strange looking at it. It almost looks like it snowed. And I know it, well, I don't know, maybe that is frozen. It's up in the 60s right now in my shirt sleeves, but there's foam out on this field. I work in an agricultural science center, you know, an experiment station. And so they're up to some kind of research. They're doing some kind of thing out here. I don't know what it is because I just work on the computers. I don't get involved in the experiments at all. And it's just what I do. It's the day job. And you guys are participating now in, I guess, what would be my night job. Keep me going. No guests, because how are you going to get guests out here in the middle of a field? But I'm walking down a Jeep trail. This is mostly for exercise. My doctor tells me I should do it. Oh, I must not get into the whole doctor thing. If you've gotten on the blog, you've seen Medimania. You can type that in, M-E-D-I-M-E-D-I-A, and hopefully it'll pop up something that's, you know, that says, hey, look, they've done two posts on this subject. And mostly my advice is to stay away from doctors if there's nothing wrong with you. You know, everybody says, oh, but I want to be preventative, I want to stay ahead of things. And you go, oh, I don't know if you really want to do that or not. Oh, anyway, Kai, before I start all this huge tangent that I did, I am the god of tangents. I was going to start talking about some of the things I listen to. Dan Carlin's one. DanCarlin.com, spelled just the way it sounds. And he's got two podcasts, both of which I listen to when I get a chance. Dan has a show called Hardcore History, a podcast called Hardcore History, you don't call show. It's really fun. He is kind of a military history buff, and he enjoys talking about these things and kind of trying to compare it back to our times on some level. And he's done huge, massive audiobooks on these things. It's almost tempting to transcribe what he says and turn it into a book. The book would probably sell better than the audiobook would. Which reminds me, another thing I need to do. Some of my stuff, I need to go ahead and render it to audiobook. You know, anything that can be done that doesn't require a lot of time and difficulty, but that spreads the word a little bit, I think that's better than spending a lot of time or money advertising. You know, especially when it has to do with kind of friends and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not the friend sort particularly. You know, I'm kind of a last hermit. Which I lapse because my wife wants me to. And so I go occasionally to public things. I'm sure God also has a hand in it as well. He likes getting involved in things in my life, and your life too, I'm sure. So, anyway, Dan Carnes wanted, Dan really gave a really kind of cool thing. Now he is, he also has a radio show that's a little more often, a little more off the cuff, although he was in broadcast radio for a long time, so he's really smooth about it. He's really good. And he can just go on and on, talking about what he's talking about. Apparently he doesn't know this either. Although I'm sure he has his talking points in front of him. I would. If I was doing it his way, but he has lots of value. Or he tries to. Beautiful setup. I remember recording equipment, really expensive, really nice recording equipment was down, and he was just using like a computer and whatever free stuff he could get together, and he was apologizing for how horrible it was, and apparently a lot of people complained and screamed about the sound quality of it. And frankly, it sounds exactly the same to me. I am not an audiophile at all. So he's quite invested in this stuff. And he does it right now for, I think he does it for his living. I'm not really sure. You know, he doesn't talk much about that. Where I guess I'm always talking about what's going on in my life. Oh, boy, there's some serious adventure. But you know, who cares? I'm walking next to an old irrigation system that's been abandoned for a very long time, and. We've been in a pretty tough drought for some years now. The rates that we set off through the irrigation have gone down so much that they haven't been in irrigation for 2 years. But yet they still collect the taxes as yet. And I know to some level that those taxes are collected to help pay back or do maintenance on the larger system. It's interesting because I actually live in town and I don't get any of the benefits of the irrigation system at all. But I think I pay about $150 a year to help crop up everybody else's too. But yeah, it's like, well, I'm confused about why I don't get any benefits from this. You know, I'm just paying into it. And back in the 40s and the 50s, this stuff was being done. You know, there was always the whole, oh, well, this is going to make two computers grow. This is going to be wonderful. It's going to bring new opportunities and new things. And that was, I think the last time they talked like that was in, like, 1960. Because this place has been kind of a tailspin. And foolishly, we keep getting suckered into new taxes and stupid stuff like that. Oh, I don't know. I haven't looked for a new tax. Ever. I don't think I've ever been here in Pittsburgh, New Mexico. Sort of weird. somebody got put into place probably 50 years ago. And as far as I'm aware, it failed government program. But, you know, it still costs money because of the property tax revenue that it gets. And you go, well, you don't have to do anything. And they go, so I got some work in that program. I hope that's been rated already by certain things. At the very least, they should set up some kind of a loan system for you to be able to loan money off of your contributions into this thing. I mean, I think it's I just try to be able to at least borrow $2,000. I get that money that sits there, you know, low interest rate, blah, blah, blah. If it's really an award test, which I doubt, I'm sure it's money that they had to get rid of every year or something, and they spent on office supplies. Stupid. I guess you get the impression I don't have a lot of faith in government, at least in the kind of government that I get involved with now. And so when I read the news, which I often do, of Shetland, and I go to shetlandtimes.co.uk, and I read the news stories, and I read everything else about what's going on, it seems that it's not so convoluted, you know? I find it to be abnormally, at least from my experience, straightforward. You know, the taxes that the council collects, now this helps that it's local, that the Shetland Islands Council collects, you know, the vast majority of it goes into council provided services that everybody uses, everybody needs, whether it's the helicopter rescue service or ferry service between the different islands. Money gets put into, what else does it get put into? Think about it for a minute. You know, tourism stuff, things like that. Things that actually come down to really feeling like it's really affecting everyday people. You know, I would have to say that if the local irrigation district here had to justify itself on a year-to-year basis for how much money it was taking from landowners like me, that they would have boarded up shop 20, 25, 30 years ago for just people saying, well, screw that, so this is, you know. Agriculture here gets worse and worse, and more of a gamble. More of our bonded farmland, you know, when a place like Chicken Carry started to grow, you know, this was one of the big public projects, was to have dams built and have water diverted to contribute to agriculture. Dryland agriculture never happened here because there's just not enough water, period. It's just not here. It doesn't rain enough. You know, and so irrigation was brought in to try and help those who had come here on the supposition that dry land farming was going to work. And it it doesn't And, well, I'm sorry. When you compare it to a place like Shetland, for instance, Shetland's got some resources to it. It's got some possibilities. There's some things that they do there that they've always done that have that retain value. Still got some fishing possibilities. Although sadly now they've got big factory boats that come and fish. The fishing stock is somewhat depleted. And so local fishermen, it's starting to peter out, the whole local fishing. It's almost like as the larger world encroaches and as you get the economics of scale by being able to load up a bunch of stuff on the boat and bring it to Shetland, Shetland has become less and less self-sufficient. And you have to understand, for a guy like me that comes from Tucumcari, that's lived in Tucumcari for, nearly 20 years now, a place that never was self-sufficient, a place that had to have everything brought in. Tucumcari's got a couple of things. Number one, it's got groundwater. Well, it's got water that's not too far down. So it's got somewhat readily accessible water as long as you don't tax it too hard. Underground river here that you can take advantage of. Now that they're not above ground rivers anymore. And that's it, It's only got water and really marginal rangeland, and I mean marginal. Sand, caliche. There's good patches of land here and there. I'm not trying to speak the place down. It does have some possibilities, but it's sketchy and, the town was built from being between one place and another place, and what was needed to keep transport going. There was a railroad town, there was a trucking town. Now both of those have modernized to the point to where Tucumcari has no purpose for being here. So, it's difficult to live in that kind of a place. It's depressing. You drive in town and about half the houses are just abandoned. At least somebody would have been nice and put up a for sale sign in front of it to actually tell you there's a possibility of getting it if you liked it. But then again, people think everything they own is of great, massive, fantastic value and want full value for it. And so if they did at one time put up a for sale sign, everybody would walk by and find out how much somebody wanted for it, and they'd scoff and go on, because there's really no point unless you're willing to pay the market rate in town. Most of them aren't. I was amazed. A family that I knew a few members of, the family was from here. Everybody moved away and found their success in life in other places. A few of them are still here. But the parents passed away. The old house is there. It's a big house. It's kind of a weird house. It's obvious that they had added on strangely, built out from it. Anyway, if you were to bring any appraiser that just appraised its value based on it being in some big city, They put a price out of $400,000. It's been on the market for a couple of years at that price. It basically fell off of the market because nobody in Tucson carried. The only people who have that kind of money are old people who are already here and established, you know, that had made that kind of money in Tucumcari when Tucumcari was a boom town. It's not a boom town anymore. And there's no reason for it ever to become a boom town. No reason at all. People who hold on to their places as if an economy will come back, as if something amazing will happen, something will happen, and all of a sudden my house will be worth what, far more than it is today. They hold on to their place, and you go, well, that was 30 years ago. Now your house is a ruin. And nobody will buy it at any price, at any price. Anyway, so that $400,000 house is finally selling for about $175,000. And still not selling well. It's still got the problems that it had. It's just that you eliminated the biggest problem, which was they way overestimated its value given the market in this place. So, I don't know what's really going to happen. I know this place is going to get smaller and smaller, and what few things it has now that makes it worthwhile, in 20 years it won't have them anymore, you know. At some point, the grocery store will close, or downsize, or something. You know, if there's not tons of federal money thrown at it, our hospital will probably disappear at some point. You know, things like that happening. And there's some people that say, oh, you're so depressing to listen to. And you go, you know, I said, okay. I said, stay here in 20 years. And I said, I'm just trying to be realistic about the death of a place. And this place is dying. It's terminal. You know, they're going to say, oh, no, some business is going to come out here and see how cheap our land is and see how inexpensive our workforce is and get all excited and decide to put in a factory or something here. And it'll bring back the economy. And you go, why would anybody pick here above someplace else? You know, this is, we're already taxed heavily. You've already tried this stunt a couple of times. Wined and dined people that were basically shysters who knew they could get wined and dined and get a lot of money thrown at them on the off chance that they would come and do something. There was one place, one thing called Desert Shrimp. And it was growing shrimp in tanks. And of course you have to go through all this process to make shrimp want to, you know, to make shrimp live in basically a tank. Well, it's a lot cheaper just to go out to the ocean and go get the shrimp and bring them back. It's a lot cheaper. And you're going, you know, I don't know what their rationale was, but the city got very excited about this fact that they wanted to come to Tucumcari. And you have to know that they were trolling for little desperate towns that wanted to compete with big towns and were willing to throw lots of money at, because that's all you have in competition with a big town, is if you're willing to basically bribe somebody to come, you know, let them come for free, you know, you can stay at a motel for for 10 years. You know, as long as you, you know, it's kind of like, I used to watch that little movie. The Canon Group did, which is kind of a Israeli outfit, Golan and Globus, did The Emperor's New Clothes. It really reminds me of that story of these guys just trying to keep people busy and interested and soaking them for all the gold and jewels they possibly could while making these amazing clothes for the king that was so sheer and so amazing that only people of discriminating taste could see them. And so nobody would tell anybody else that there really were no clothes because that would make them look like they were idiots or, you know, they were low class or whatever. Might lose their job working for the king. And the king wasn't going to say anything either. He had to keep his reputation as being a man of great refinement. So, you know, milked him. And I think that's what happened with this particular thing. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen in other places. You know, he says, well, why are you going to Shetland? I'm sure that happens there too. And they go, yeah, it happens everywhere. I'd have to say, it seems like people over there have learned from it. Seems like people here are still getting sucked into it, mostly by their own employees. We have an economic development director. I thought it was rather interesting. He's getting a talk about what his office was doing to, you know, justify all the tax money he was getting. He's one of the highest paid people in our area that earns a salary. And he was talking about all this stuff that he had no business. He was not even involved in. But he was taking credit for it. This is typical government stuff, taking credit for stuff that you had no business, you had no hand in. In fact, if he got involved at all, it was mostly in annoying the people that were getting the thing done, you know. Oh, this wonderful thing happened. I was a part of it. You go, yeah, until the people finally changed the locks because they were tired of you breaking in and vamping for photo ops with everybody. So, anyway. And it's really quite nice to see when I read the news stories from Shetland how much they are trying to cut their budget. You hear nothing about that in this area. It's never discussed, or at least it's not discussed openly. It's usually behind closed doors. You know, they're cutting services left and right, and you're still struggling to figure out who got laid off. You know, every organization, government notwithstanding, your biggest expense is, you know, manpower, money, salaries. And so if you're not cutting back that kind of stuff, you know, you're really then, you know, it's really just Whistling Dixie. Of course, that's the story of the town I live in now. It still has the city size, the city government size and payroll to service a town of 15,000, which is what was projected in its heyday back in the 60s, the early 60s. you know. And they still keep up all that. They still provide all these services. We still have a golf course. I don't know how many people actually use it. Taxpayer supported. Mostly built and started and put together by people who are either A, long dead, or B, moved from here when opportunity presented itself better elsewhere. But yet, we still have to keep up the stupid thing. For those who are left, boy, that thing scream out to be privatized, and about 5 minutes after it's privatized, they'll close it down and just get rid of it. And you go, sounds great, let's do it. Oh, we need to have a golf course. Everybody's got a golf course. Jeez. No, we don't. It says, why don't we be novel for one time in our lives? Don't bother having a golf course. Says they can go down to the city next door, 60 miles away, if they're really desperate for golfing opportunities. It's like there's this roving band of 1,000 millionaires who just drive 30 or 40 minutes, however long it takes to get to the next town, and then they want to all plunk down and go play a game of golf every single day. You know, I've never heard of such a thing. I've never heard of anybody even like that. So, yeah, it just totally amazes me. And I don't know who first came up with the idea that every single little town needed a golf course. Because golf courses are expensive. And the maintenance of it is expensive. And in order to keep justifying the fact that there is a golf course, you have to hire a golf pro to help teach people how to be better golfers. Because if they're not very good at golfing, well, they're not going to golf very much. They may even stop and do something else. Oh my gosh, is it... I thought I felt a raindrop. Oh my gosh. Around here, that's a pretty good nothing. Typical rain is it spits a little and then it gives up. And looking up at the sky, I'm surprised there's any water in it at all. It's mostly partly cloudy. And there's not much above my head, but some clouds. Some real skimpy ones too. Anyway, you know, it's just one of those things. And there's always two or three of those. How come this one pastime is so important that it requires a group of people, full-time staff, a ton of land, all this equipment that you need to have, that you need to repair so you can rent it to people. People don't bring their own golf carts very often. They expect you to have it. And they expect the rent to be cheap. You know, especially if it's not Cocoa Beach or something like that, you know. It's not this amazing thing. Your city will have paid millions of dollars to Andy Palmer or any number of other people to come and design this course. And of course, it's just, you know, it's just like, why don't you get a cheaper hobby, you know? Baseball is cheaper. People bring their own balls and bats and mitts. All you got to do is give them a backstop and a pretty small chunk of dirt, and you're good to go. You don't even have to put a fence around it unless you feel weird. Most of them do. You know, A pool's a better expenditure, you know, because our biggest problem is we can hardly keep up our pool, but you know what? We've still got a golf course. How many kids have the resources to go out and golf? Says, an afternoon of golf, if you don't have any of the equipment, what kid would, is going to cost you a freaking lot of money. You know, you're going to have to rent this, you got to have the shoes, you got to do all, you're like, oh, you do all this crap. And, I'm sorry. There's a choice between a public pool and a public golf course. That's a no-brainer, man. But you know what gets gotten rid of first is the pool. It happened in Clovis. There's a town pool not too far from here that got abandoned, got turned into something else. They filled it in with dirt and tried to make a playground out of it. So, I'm not saying Shetland's any better, but hopefully, you know, it takes advantage, and it's got authentic things going on that actually bring in revenue, which Chicken Trade does not have. The only revenue they have is from directly taxing the people, taxing what little economic activity goes on here. And property taxes, I guess. We've got like the third highest tax rate in New Mexico. The other two places that have higher tax rates are both major tourist traps, and we are not. It says, we are not a destination. We are a way station. People, I used to be the night auditor at a motel here just for, I think it was only for 6 or 8 weeks. I was doing it in addition to my day job. And I found that people are mean. People are mean, nasty, and rotten. Most of the people that ended up in Tucumcari were people who had wanted to stop in Amarillo, but all of the motels were full there that they were willing to go to. So they would pull up in Tucumcari and start griping and complaining about stuff. And I thought, you know, and that was what when I found out, you know, people say, oh, it's a Chicken Trade destination. People come here and they come to our museum and it's fantastic and all this stuff. And you go, nobody comes here. They said, there's so few people coming through here. I don't even know why we even bother, you know. Anyway, I'm sorry. And people say, oh, you're just a stick in the mud. And you're going, yeah, well, let me tell you. I says, I think I have a right to complain. I pay taxes. And I buy stuff here. And I get charged that excessive tax rate. You know? The travelers don't care. Half of them don't even buy anything here. They'll travel on. You know? Our most successful businesses are two truck stops and a convenience store. Beyond that, that's about it. I don't know if this isn't ultimately the fate of Shetland, too. You know? So I can't say this, they've been on the uphill side, they've been getting increased population. Either they're not losing as much, or new people are moving in. I think it's a little bit of both. And But anyway, I need to put snow down. I'm about to my finish here. I guess the difference between Tucumcari loses about 10% of its population every 10 years. And it seems to be getting faster. People are emptying out faster. You know, and what do you want to do? Force people to stay here? You know? If you want to improve that number, that seems like about the only thing that you can do. Oh, we're going to try to increase the things, try to keep people to stay here. And you go, why would anybody want to stay here? The moment will come soon when, you know, as you get smaller, things start to fall apart more. Especially when, you know, like, let's take Tucumcari. It's only existed for about 100 years. Before then, nobody lived here. You know, Shetland, at least you can say that they've had constant habitation there for 7,000 years. And you go, well, then there's got to be something here that's worth doing that. It wasn't like people were stuck on these islands. You know, there was trade going on. People could have left. People could have left at any time, but they chose not to. And you go to a place like Tucumcari, and said it grew up for the need of a railroad coming through. And now it's dying out for no longer such a need. You don't need it anymore. Anyway, so, golly, boy, did I wander all over the place, and I typically do. So, I'm not even asking you to hang with it. Listen when you want to, don't listen when you don't want to. Every episode's about an hour long, usually a little bit more than an hour. This one's an hour, so it's 7. Anyway, you've been listening to The Far Side of the Moon. I'm Jason Neville. Have a great day.